Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from your First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumabrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. And you can have your saber callers on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Now, the latest issues paper released by the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of People with Disability seeks information about experiences of First Nations people with disability. So I'd love for a mob to come to the table and explain their situation, tell their story. And look, straight on, I'm going to be catching up and having a yarn now with Commissioner Andrea Mason, OAM, and they're inviting First Nation people with disability and their families, communities and organisations to respond to the issues paper. We've got Andrea on the line. Andrea, very good morning. How are you?
Oh, good, thank you, Trevor. Sounds like it's a lovely time up there in Queensland.
Sun shining, yes. They say it's a winter here upon us, but we're going to bed with just a sheet and a singlet. I didn't mean to torment you. Where are you based, Andrea?
I'm on beautiful central Arrernte country in central Australia. I live in Alice Springs.
Okay, Alice Springs, beautiful. Look, yeah. a very important discussion regarding our mob with disability. And if you can just elaborate on the latest issues paper released by the Royal Commission.
The terms of reference of this Royal Commission requires us to particularly look at the circumstances of First Nations people with disability. Mm. In the areas that are a focus for this Royal Commission, which is violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation of people with disabilities. It's a very, very broad terms of reference, which means that we're looking at governments, institutions, communities. We're looking at all systems and people might be more comfortable with the word sectors. So with education, health, accommodation, housing, early learning, justice, employment, family, relationships. It's a very, very broad terms of reference.
Sure.
And our mob would also be aware of language around discrimination, racism, disadvantage. And for First Nations people with disability, It's the scoreboard where unfortunately they're at the top of the scoreboard in all the areas that we mark as areas of significant disadvantage, poverty.
Yes.
They are very highly represented. Trevor, what we've also been able to find through our work in analysing data through the ABS, the Australian Bureau of Statistics, is that we've found that First Nations adults, of that total number in Australia, for those between 18 and 65 years of age, 48% of adults have a disability. And of First Nations children, we have 22% of our First Nations children with disabilities. So these are very significant numbers.
High numbers.
High numbers. And so with that level of critical mass of numbers, and we know that there are experiences of violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation in our communities. This is the reason why the Royal Commission was established, with significant advocacy from organisations like First Peoples Disability Network and also NATSLS, the National Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Legal Services. We know that people are experiencing disadvantage, discrimination, racism, lack of access. And so we really encourage our community with disability, their families,
to come to the table and tell their story. Is that right, Andrea?
Community organisations, yes, absolutely.
And shed light on their life, virtually. Good or bad, just need that communication. And hearing it from across the board, but especially at grassroots level as well.
And we've got the opportunity to do this. We understand that this is not easy. We know that there's issues around being labelled as being someone with a disability, and there's discrimination out in the general community. And of course we have members of the stolen generation who have trauma associated with a terrible time in our history, and that distrust of services. So there are good reasons why people feel reluctant to come and share and access and talk about their stories. We want to do that in a very safe way.
Yes.
So we really encourage people, even if they want to have that first talk, to contact the Royal Commission on our inquiries line to say, what support can I get? Because we do have counselling support. We have NATSLs who are involved in providing legal advice through a service. So there's different ways people can get themselves informed even before they provide their story or case studies even to the Royal Commission.
Well, that information then helps navigate into the future regarding supporting, respecting our people with disability, yes?
It does. They're crying out for a change to their experiences in Australia of actually enjoying their human rights.
Exactly.
All the accesses that they would like, that they see others being unable to access. And this Royal Commission, we believe, could be transformative, but the building blocks of change and recommendations are stories from the community, and this is why this is so important.
Well, it gives it more meat on the bone in regard to discussions with the authorities or the high end of this country to act and support our people with disability.
That's right, Trevor. And as you would know, as First Nations people know, there are lots of individual stories of experiences.
And pardon the pun, but it falls on deaf ears.
Well, you know, the chance for it to fall on listening ears, this Royal Commission. But what we know is those individual stories, when there is such a pattern, when there is a collection of a pattern of stories, we call that systemic.
Okay.
If it's in justice or if it's in health or education. So this is the other value of a Royal Commission. We can look at those individual stories, but we also can look at systemic change.
Mm.
We can also look at what's working. We can find out from the community about what's working, but also where changes need to be made because those services and approaches aren't working. So really keen to hear from people.
Look, it changes the so-called affirmation that we've been running with for the last 4 or 5 months in regard to COVID-19. We are all in this together. And there it stands in regarding supporting First Nation people with disability.
That's right. And this is our chance to get behind this Royal Commission as a community. And this is what we do. We can tell the stories of what's not working, but we also can tell the stories of how life could be and the solutions that could help us have that better life for our First Nations people with disability.
Yes. Look, I'm lucky enough to, after having a beautiful yarn with you, to be catching up with Sister Jodie Barney, and she's a Birigubba Irrigan deaf woman from Queensland, and as a leading Aboriginal disability cultural trainer and consultant, and have a talk to her about how she's worked for over 30 years in the disability space across Australia internationally. And they're the sort of stories that you're looking for, yes?
That's right, and she has that lived experience, but she's also an incredible advocate. So I'm sure those listening today are going to really hear some good insights, but also her advocacy to encourage people to respond to our issues paper.
Yeah, beautiful. Look, a very important space, and thank you for working in this space. It's very, very important, and it's needed. And our First Nation people with disability, just to let them know, we love and support them, respect them, we're here for them, and we're using the vehicle as such to help support and guide them into the future, yes?
Yeah, thank you very much, Trevor. That's a lovely way to close our conversation today.
Yeah, beautiful, Andrew. All the best to you and your team and your family in the times that we're living at the moment, COVID-19. Stay safe, yeah. and we'll be in touch, sister.
Thank you so much, and you as well.
Bye, Andrea.
Bye.
a diddly yarn there with the Commissioner, Andrea Mason, OAM, and she's the Commissioner for inviting, well, she's inviting First Nation people with disability and their families, communities and organisations to respond to the issues paper, and the paper released by the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of People with Disability. So they're seeking for more information about the experiences of First Nation people with disability, and then they can help our mob who are disabled in that sense, and help them with their future aspirations, their life, and having a normal life, so to speak, the best way that we can support in making that happen. Have your say, you mob. Yarn up strong here on National Talk Black. Want to hear from you. That deadly number here is 1-800-422-416, and we're live here from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns as BB and Bumba Brit Media, 99.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have your say, you mob. Yarn with the bully one, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for National Talk Black. Give me a call, 1-800-422-416.
G'day, you mob. This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
Welcome to the deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BB and Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and Voice for Our People, so do utilise it, 1-800-422-416. I had an interview earlier with Commissioner Andrea Mason, OAM, and Andrea Mason from the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of People with Disability, seeking for stories from First Nation people, their experiences. And look, I'm now going to catch up over yarn with Sister Jodie Barney, a deaf lady from Queensland, First Nation lady, and just talk about her life and, yep, and working life and what have you. Jodie, a very good morning, my sister. How are you?
Oh, great. Thanks very much. How are you going?
I'm very good. Thank you for
a bit of a chat with you.
Yeah, thank you for coming to the program. First of all, who your mob were you from?
Okay, well, my mob are Burry Gubba.
Mm-hmm.
And also Yurang mob. That's close to Fraser Island.
All right, yes.
And sort of Townsville, those two areas. So, yeah, that's where I'm from.
Beautiful country.
My Barney mob is in Townsville. You know, we're pretty much everywhere there, I reckon.
Lovely, thank you. So you're a First Nation woman, a deaf woman, and a leading Aboriginal disability cultural trainer consultant, and you've worked about 30 years in the disabled space across Australia and internationally. So tell us quickly about your journey, my sister.
My journey started in Mackay.
Mm-hmm.
So I was actually born on Baker River.
Baker River, yes.
Missionary.
Yep,
Baker River Missionary. The mission there. So from there, my life sort of went downhill a bit because the government in Queensland at the time, that was, early 1970s, they were still taking away the children.
Yes.
So I was stolen. I'm stolen generations as well. I was moved down to Victoria, and so I grew up there for a while. Lucky enough, my father, deadly black fella. He came and found us. He found us kids.
Yes.
He came and got us all back and took us home to Queensland. And you know, I was eight. When they found out I was deaf, that's when I was actually
gone. So you were born deaf? Sorry, Jodie, you were born deaf, is that right?
Yeah, I was born deaf, but, you know, I wasn't called deaf or labelled as deaf or anything. They always said, you know, Binna.
Binna, yep.
Binna Burra, yeah. Binna
okay. Burra,
yeah, that's what they call me.
Okay.
So, you know, I hear silly, you know, that's the old days. There was no word around that meant deaf.
No, exactly.
So my father, he used to finger spell, he used to sign,
yep.
He used Aboriginal sign,
mm-hmm.
and he'd actually learnt that from the sugarcane workers, the
yep.
sugar cutters,
yep.
Because they did a lot of signing there. So I've got some traditional owners there of the South Sea Islands as well in my background. So he learnt that. I learnt that sign language first. That was the first part where I was taught signing as in my language. And then... I ended up using a system that they used at the time where they didn't use the language of the deaf community.
Mm.
At the time, it wasn't labelled Australian Sign Language, is what we call it now, Auslan. But back then, we were taught something that was called Sign English. And so it was the same as English, but in signs. And it was so confusing. It totally did my head in. It didn't make sense. It didn't match my culture. It didn't match the way I thought. You know, so it was really difficult.
Would have been very really difficult. And look, being being a woman who's deaf but also black, I mean, you had virtually the world against you in a way, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, the funny thing is that I'm really fair as well.
Okay.
I'm really, my mum was Irish. Mm. She was an Irish woman. So
so you would have been known as a half-caste back in the day.
About the colour. Yeah, I was. And I was easy to assimilate too, you know, because I was the little blonde kid, you know, with the green eyes, little, you know, and I was very easy for me to assimilate, is what they said. So my auntie was always calling me White Jen. But I grew up. And, you know, I was involved in many community stuff, always go out to the, you know, my dad's work and all those sorts of things. And I learned so many different Aboriginal sign languages, you know, all over the place. And, but fortunately, really fortunately, I actually moved to look after my grandparents.
Mm-hmm. And where were they living?
So, yeah, they lived here in Victoria where I am now.
Okay, lovely, yep, okay.
Yeah, so through my work, through my working life, you know, I've had a lot of discrimination. I've had a lot of racism.
Yes.
A lot of oppression. And, you know, it's the same fallout mob, you know.
Of course.
Everyone's got the experiences of the way that, you know, that happens. So how I deal with that is, you know, black humour. You know,
black humour, that's right, yep. Fake it till you make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yep, continue.
Yeah, absolutely, spot on. Yeah, so, you know, often I'm trying to smile and, you know, just be nice to those people in the background and thinking, crazy.
Yep, we know.
Yeah, that's right. So I grew up, you know, fortunate. My mum who passed away, but she was a singer. And my mum taught me to speak and to sort of try and listen to sounds and stuff.
Yep.
My auntie was a speech therapist, so she taught me how to use my speech. She did that for 16 years.
Yes.
Yeah, and the thing is,
the support was very strong for you, wasn't it?
I was drag kicking and screaming, though. I didn't want to do it.
Okay.
But the benefits now, I've got the benefits now of that.
Of course.
It was, you know, so helpful for communication and all these different areas with a variety of people. And, you know, if I needed to be a voice and represent people, I could do that. And I needed to understand their language as well, my home language and all the different languages around the country.
So your deafness became the tool, the vehicle, so to speak, for your life.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, this is who I am. It's just who I am. You know?
Exactly. It's
and,
who you,
you
are.
Know, I, for many years, a lot of people were telling me that I wasn't allowed to sign. You know, I was banned from signing. It's bad for your development. You can't speak English if you learn to sign. And and I can lip read quite well. I can speak relatively well at home, you know, but if in front of a whole bunch of strangers, you know, our mob have shame. So, you know, I don't want to.
Sure.
But I learned.
Yep.
I learned to be strong and assertive and get out there and talk to people. But often, you know, I've had a sort of random experience, like maybe the neighbours. The odd experience where, you know, they may have a disability.
Sure.
And they don't know how to access information. So I thought, okay, all right then. My mum would say, you know, go and sign to them, you know, go and explain to them, go and help them, go and help the lady with the disability down the road, you know, go. She knew our ways. you know, if you knew, you help each other, you help community.
Yes.
And my dad was always saying, you have to learn English. You need to learn how to write English. And so I didn't want to. Again, I'm not great at it.
Sure.
I haven't got that real fancy language. And, you know.
But you sound stubborn, my sister.
You know, Yeah. I'm stubborn. Yeah, clearly. But I'm not sure if that's the black in me or the Irish in me.
True, too.
You know, it might be both.
That's right. Strong people, both cultures.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the thing is, you have to be, because respect, you know, I can't just focus on my Aboriginal history and just focus on that. I had to respect my mum's family as well.
Of course, of course. Yep, you carry her blood as well.
She experienced discrimination as well. She had all sorts of terrible stuff happen to her.
Mm.
So I respected both of my cultures, and I already knew reconciliation. You know,
yes.
It was in my family.
Exactly.
You know, you can see it. Mum and dad, and that's who they were, and our families, their families, and they knew, you know, everyone had a bit of a go with each other, you know, but the way that we mob work. So, you know, so it's both that way. So anyway, life went on, and then, you know, it'd be easy to understand, you know, meetings with, you know, white people in government and all the stuff that they're in. Because I'm a visual person, I'd look around the room and I'd see, you know, okay, so the way that they're talking to each other, they're talking bullshit.
Sure, yeah. You look at body language, read lips, expression. Yep,
absolutely,
all the above.
Absolutely, body language. All right, who's making sure, who's telling the true story here, you know? And then I think, okay, that's that person.
Yes.
They're the person. I'll help them.
Yep.
You know, they're the person in the room. Yeah, and they wanted, you know, they wanted to do the work. They wanted to really roll their sleeves up and work hard. And work with us. So we worked, you know, we worked really well together. Yeah, and that's been part of my life for many years now. Over 30 years, in fact.
Yes.
You know,
so what space are you working in at the moment, Jodie?
Oh, at the moment?
Yes.
at the moment I'm home because, you know, coronavirus.
Of course, thank
but
you.
It's driving a bit crazy. I do miss going out to our country, but, you know, I'm doing sort of work nationally, Australia-wide. I'm actually living on Yorta Yorta land at the moment, and so that's in Shepparton.
Yep.
In Victoria.
Okay, fantastic,
okay.
Yes.
So about my work, though, at the moment, I'm still doing the consulting that I have been doing. I don't know, I think I started a business. You know, when you start a business, you say yes to everything and take on everything.
Of course, yes.
And then, you know, and then after, you know, many years, you realise, hang on, you know, I'm going to work with the experts.
Yeah.
You know, and my expertise now is mostly with deaf Indigenous people who have cognitive impairments.
Yeah,
you know, they
beautiful.
Might be in custody.
Yep.
You know, they might be unfit to plead. So I help work with the organisations that actually support the judges and the legal team and interpreters, and really work till we're working together and really set up that communication with the different people and make sure that we're, you know, because you know, our mob always, we get stuck.
Well, we do. And my sister, we need people like you. Fantastic, you know, standing up for our mob who are black, as well as disabled, and sometimes are pushed to the side. So we appreciate the space that you work in. We appreciate who you are. And to me, it's a great fit and a godsend, I would say.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks, Trevor. Because I've had such a wonderful, deadly chance of representing people and meeting people who do the same thing as me, advocates, you know, I've got a deadly sister on the board as well, who works in Adelaide.
Yes.
Yeah, so we've got some really strong advocating deaf mob, and also, I guess, in Cairns deaf as well.
Exactly.
The deadly mob up there.
Exactly.
They're fantastic.
Yep.
You know, they work really well. They help each other.
Yep, know the mob.
You know, they really support each other, and they're up, you know, really helping the community. So there's some wonderful people, but I think in this area, in the justice system, there's not many of us.
True.
And often you see people in the sort of forensic side or people in the doing sort of a bit of minor project work or doing stats or, but not really getting in there and doing the work to try and change with
exactly. And if you look at it, you're because doing your job, you're doing your job, but and you're paying the bills and you're passionate about what you're doing, but whether you like it or not, and you probably do like it, you are a mentor and you're an inspiration for brothers and sisters with disability. Yes.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, and thanks for saying that. Often I make sure that my role is I get paid because it is a service.
Yes.
But you know that when they leave that job, I'm still there.
Yes,
I've
exactly.
still got the cultural protocols that I'm following. I'm still looking after that person.
Yes.
I need to check on them. Yes. I need to see if they're okay.
Yes.
You know, and regardless of whether I get paid or not, I'm going to keep looking at them.
Your heart and your spirit's in the right place, my sister.
Yeah, because you've got to keep looking after people.
Exactly.
You know, you can't just leave them.
Exactly.
And the thing is, when they're released from prison or when they're out in the community, you know, you've got to figure out how to help their family, you know, wherever they are, help set them up somewhere. So you know it's sort of that new, that NDIS you may have heard of.
Yes, NDIS,
and
of
trying
course.
Trying to help families, trying to work their way around that and trying to find how they can access it and... You know, whether they've got having discrimination against them and, you know, if there's abuse, you know, and of course, you just got to check on them and there's issues. You've just got to keep standing with them. And it's really important to know their story of the people around there and, you know, all the stuff that's gone on for them. And there's no... You know,
well, I think you've found your calling in life, my sister. You found your calling in life, and you are where you're meant to be. And I always say that my best definition of a job or career is find something you love doing, find someone to pay you to do it, or start your own business doing it. And if you're working with passion, well, you won't work a day in your life. And Jody, my sister, I think you're doing just that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I had to do it. Because, you know, I worked for organisations in the past and I was discriminated against.
Yes.
And it was over and over again. And like, you know, an example of that, I was told with the organisation, look, you can't hear on the phone, so I guess you have to go and clean the kitchen. You go clean the toilet.
Yes.
Or, you can't drive the work car because you're deaf.
Yes.
Or you can't work with those clients because you can't hear if there's any violence in the background. Or there's any damage going on. I'm like, what?
And you know what? You know what? Success is the best revenge.
Yeah, so I went back to university, started university.
Yep.
And got my business degree because I know.
There you go.
I'm always hit a barrier. And then the manager always goes, it's a management issue. Or it's it's a funding issue. Or that's above my pay grade, you know. And I went, okay, well, I'll go back to uni and I will learn how to have that conversation with those people.
Yep,
you know, so we can stop that kind of rubbish.
Well, you're resilient, and like most black people are, we're that way inclined, and we've been here for 40,000 years. We're not going nowhere, disabled or not, see or not, hear or not, strong black people. Love your work, and I thank you very much for sharing, Jody. Look, all the best to you, my sister, and your team, and your family. Keep doing what you're doing. Please do keep in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. Look, just before I go... I just wanted to let you know and let community know that it's really important. There's an issues paper that's being released at the moment.
Yes.
And it's for our mob to actually contribute and...
Tell their story.
And be confident.
Yes.
Absolutely. And say, you know, feel safe, you know, have dignity in the report that they're going to send off. You know, there probably could be support through the process. You don't just have to... tell your story and then that's it. You get support through the whole process.
Exactly.
You know, and you can actually determine. It's self-determination. You can decide what's best, you know, what you want to tell, you know, so we can change the system so that it works for our mob with disability.
Lovely.
And also the other thing is there's respect, you know, there's protection of culture, you know, who your identity, you know, how you do your business, and just making sure that, you know, we're all equal and stopping that discrimination.
Exactly.
At every level.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's from any experience. It's not just something that's happened now. It could have been when you were younger.
Of course.
To tell the commission. It could be, you know.
Well, everyone's now got a story to tell.
Anything, cradle to grave. Yeah, exactly. And it's any time from, you know.
Jodie, so beautiful. You know, thank you very much for sharing, my dear.
Great. Thanks very much, Trevor.
All the best. You take care. Keep smiling, sis. Bye-bye now.
I will. You too.
A beautiful yarn. Jodie Barney, her name is. Look, a Birriagaba Oorugan deaf woman from Queensland. And look, telling her story as a black woman, as a deaf woman, and how she travels through life and how she worked for over 30 years in the disability space across Australia and internationally. A very deadly yarn. And that's the conversation that came to the table regarding the latest issue paper released by the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of people with disability, seeks information about experiences of First Nation people with disability, and Jodie Barney was one of those persons. So to the mob out there, share your story and help shed the light on successes and also failures for our people with disability, and how we can help guide, support and put them into the future with a smile on the dial. To Daily Mob, have your say, yarn up strong here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
G'day folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
in my way to be free. Like a fish on a hook, like a knife in some old-fashioned book, I have saved all my ribbons for thee. And a baby stillborn, like a beast with its horns, I have torn everyone that reached out to me. And by all I have done wrong, I'll make it all up to thee.
Two Deadly Birds on a Wire, Troy Cassidaly featuring Bella here on your Deadly program, National Talk Black. Have your say, your mob, 1-800-422-416. Call that number, Yana, with yours truly, Trevor Tim Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. Your host for your Daily program, National Talk Black, and we come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Now, we're going to catch up a yarn with Professor Mary Louise McLaws, a member of the World World Health Organization, that's WHO, Health Emergency Program Expert Advisory Panel for Infection Prevention and Control Preparedness, Readiness and Response to COVID-19. And the topic will public health response measures, lifting restrictions and where to from here within her field. On the line, Professor Mary Louise, good morning, how are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming to the program. Where are you based, Professor?
Well, at the moment, I'm in Sydney. I have a very tolerant university, the University of New South Wales, that allows me to be both an academic at that university and do my work with WHO.
Fantastic. And wearing two hats there. Well, many hats looking at your bio here. Fantastic. Look, we're in the world is upside down thanks to COVID-19. So my conversation with the public health response measures, lifting restrictions and where to from here within your field. Can you please explain where we're at in regarding COVID-19 and life after COVID-19?
Well, I'd first of all say that we shouldn't be looking too far ahead because I'm not sure that we will have life after COVID-19 for quite some time.
Mm.
The Chinese biotech company has got a phase 3 vaccine trial. A phase 3 is about safety. That phase usually lasts up to 4 years, but it's going to be done hopefully rapidly, but also ethically and safely. And they're going to trial that vaccine in Brazil in about 9,000 people. And of course, the University of Oxford is going to trial their version of the vaccine in Brazil as well in 2,000 people. So maybe we might have some good news by the end of the year. But my point is that we might have to deal with a new normal, which is not very pleasant. But we've been very lucky in Australia to try to get our numbers down really low. And at the moment, the last 14 days, including travellers coming in with COVID, we've had 141 cases. So we're doing very well.
So with the lifting of restrictions, we need to do it cautiously and we need to tread carefully because we're not out of the woods yet.
Absolutely. We need to be very cautious and to understand our responsibility for people that have vulnerable health issues as well. So the government has made it clear that it's not going for zero. It's going for a controlled, low level of numbers. And so it's lifting restrictions. Some of those lifting of restrictions have some confusion around them. So and I think that the public need to have more of a discourse with the authorities about how they're thinking, but you know, we're a very innovative and creative group in Australia, and to lift those restrictions we could be very innovative on how we do it safely.
Well, exactly. And so the government has virtually got a juggling act in regarding the economy and the health, health with the people, with the constituents, yes?
Absolutely. Well, one of the most important things about controlling a pandemic, and this is the second one I've been involved with, is not just controlling the numbers, but bringing in the public as partners. And Australians are a wonderful group, and they have partnered with the authorities because Australians like to have things explained. We can we can see from a mile off when there's irrationality or an illogical part of decision making, and so we make our authorities explain and reconsider. But we're not as contrite or as sometimes as difficult as other groups. When we're told to do something that sounds reasonable, we're very compliant. I mean, look at the gun laws that, you know, we just went, sure. Then it was, please stay at home and try and keep your distance. And most Australians have really been amazingly compliant.
Sure.
It's just when we start lifting restrictions, people get a little confused and think we're out of the woods. And this is where you have to still have buy-in out by the public and have them trust you.
Yes.
and get them to understand that we're still in potentially a dangerous situation.
So there's not a lot of light at the end of the tunnel at this point in time.
I'm sorry. We are doing very well. Queensland is doing, very, very well. Northern Territory, brilliantly. Western Australia had the occasional case over the last 14 days, but they and Tasmania have done very well. So there's no reason why Queensland couldn't open their term bubble with those states, and I believe that that's what they're thinking of doing, which will help your economy. I mean,
sure.
I understand there is a...
Especially tourism.
Exactly, and apparently we Australians like to go overseas a lot, and instead of spending our money overseas, we could be spending
it here
in this beautiful country.
Exactly. Definitely. Exactly. So we just need to do our bit, abide by the laws and rules that are in place. And like I said, the government are doing a juggling act in that sense. But when we speak all of Australians and how we've been performing, well, common sense comes to the table and we've been abiding by the laws. And that's why we're one of the leading countries on the globe that's doing their bit regarding keeping this curve line flattened, so to speak. Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, we are very much I guess the country that people look to, us and New Zealand.
New Zealand, yes.
Constantly, yes, spoken about at WHO and in the international scientific community. So we should be very pleased with ourselves because it's not just the authority, as you've quite rightly pointed out, that has been successful. It's been the Australian people.
Yes.
Been doing really well.
All right, we need to continue with that. Thank you very much for sharing a very important conversation. Professor, all the best to you and your team and your family. Look, stay safe and we'll yarn soon.
Oh, thank you so much. And all of you stay safe and all your listeners, and I'd be happy to come back anytime.
Lovely. Thank you, Professor. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A deadly yarn there with Professor Mary Louise McLaws, her name is. She's a member of the World Health Organization, WHO, and Health Emergency Programs Experts Advisory Panel for Infection Prevention and Control Preparedness, Readiness and Response to COVID-19, and the conversation there regarding the public health response measures, lifting restrictions and where to from here within her field. And as we know, the norm as such may not be the same in the future when COVID-19 disappears. But at this stage, it is still amongst us in regard to the no vaccine being produced. A lot of the scientists and numerologists and virologists around the world are working very hard to find the vaccine. But at this point in time, there's no vaccine. So we just need to live by the rules that are in place. Your Mob 2 Daily, stay tuned to your daily program, National Talkback, Squeezing the Yarn, if you like. 6 minutes to go on the program, 11:54 in sunny North Queensland. Love to hear from you. 1-800-422-416. Yarn with the Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Mainstream, Yossi Yindi here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Murray going to sign off for you, Mob. I thank you very much for your company. Back in the hot seat again tomorrow. That deadly number, 1-800-422-416. You can text a brother, 045-714-0550. That's 24/7. Otherwise, our Facebook page as well, which is 24/7. BBM, 987 FM. Look, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, stay safe. And we'll be yarning soon. Too Deadly. Got the news coming up with NIRS. Too Deadly.
it in all its bark. Mushroom clouds are building, monsoon rain is coming, black ants working hard. My tube Shanghai in my den, younger folks with blacky bands going hunting for the day. A good bird is calling as a rain. Splash, I remember.